This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
I know that some in our audience know the finer points of hockey.
The Chris Johnston Show.
We are your friends.
The biggest stories, bringing you inside the game.
What did you hear?
The Chris Johnston Show.
What is going on?
Here's Chris with your host, Julian McKenzie.
Part of the game.
My, oh my, how the turntables when it comes to Brady Tkachuk and the Ottawa Senators. And empty net goals. I presume you saw what happened between Ottawa and New Jersey over the weekend where Nico Hischier decided to put the puck in the net after the game was over and Brady Tkachuk was less than reasonable about it.
I did. I was worried you were going to bring this topic up, though, because...
You were worried I was going to bring this up?
Only because I know we dove into it like on multiple episodes with the whole Ridley Gregg and Morgan Riley thing. And, you know, I think we were more or less came to a consensus that, you know, do what you got to do. Like, just win, you know?
Yeah, and... but, like, I mean, I especially wanted to bring it up because I'm sure there are going to be people. I mean, not I'm sure. Literally, Steve Dangle bullied me about it over text over the weekend about this. Because a lot of Leafs fans were very upset about it when it happened to them. And Morgan Riley are all like, see? You see how bad it is? You see? Hypocrite. Hypocrite. Brady Tkachuk is a hypocrite in this instance, though. They're not wrong.
Yeah, but I mean, he didn't cross-check him in the head. That's ultimately, Morgan Riley got suspended because he cross-checked a player in the head.
You said
after
it, not
the
me.
Play had stopped. I'm just saying. I'm not defending Brady Tkachuk here. That's why I don't want to go too deep into this, because I'm worried that we're going to fall down a rabbit hole. But... like, the issue, in a way, wasn't the fact that Morgan Riley was offended by the slapshot goal. It's how he responded to it, right? And had he gone over there and just kind of wrestled with him a little bit or, like, sent a message that way, had some words, you know, he wouldn't have been suspended. That play would have happened at the end of that game. It would have been forgotten within 6 seconds, and we would move right on. But, you know, instead he made a mistake. He cross-checked him in the head. He paid his penalty. He since kind of owned up to it. Like, I think we don't need to like go back blow by blow on that one. But the difference here, of course, Tkachuk was not happy, but he didn't do anything that like outright crossed the line. It's just people are digging up his quote. He was on Spit and Chicklets, I think, and said that he was like laughing when he saw Gregg do it. I mean, I don't know. Empty net gates, man. Like, what are the odds? What is going on?
Like, but you see how ridiculous it is that we're focusing on this, right? Like, how it's become this topic. And I get, I'm the fact that I'm talking about it, maybe that makes me a hypocrite in some ways, but no, it doesn't, because this all blew up because fans and people felt a certain way about something they shouldn't have been feeling away in the first place, because Morgan Riley shouldn't have done what he had done.
Yeah, but here's the thing. I'll die on this hill. Morgan Riley is fine to feel like that was offensive. Like, that's okay. He cannot like that. It's just how he responds to that. There's different ways to respond when you don't like something, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he clearly went too far. I'm not like, I'm fine. Like, that's dead and buried.
Yeah, yeah.
But like,
that's dead and
like,
buried.
I'm not saying guys should go around cross-checking other guys in the head after the play when they don't like something that player has done. There are other ways. There are other legal ways within that game or in the next game to send a message. It's part of the sport. Certainly trash talk. There's nothing off limits about some trash talk. Again, within certain parameters, don't cross certain lines, but there's lots of ways to make your displeasure felt that don't involve a cross check to the head. That's where I'll land on that. So my point is I don't really have that big a problem with Brady Tkachuk being upset. It's just all about how you handle it. And look, it's been a frustrating season in Ottawa. It's an emotional game. Like, I have to always keep underlining that point. Like, we don't like the way sometimes the emotion boils over, and obviously it leads to some incidents that you can't condone. But part of why we love the freaking game is that the players care so much, that it's intense, that it's fast, that, you know, Brady Tkachuk embodies all of that in Ottawa. It's funny. I was on radio in Toronto on Overdrive on Monday, and they were asking me, like, does Brady Tkachuk need to rein it in? And I was like, maybe to some degree, but this is who the guy is. Like, I think with time, and more maturity and just growing older, he'll understand the best way to channel that energy. You know, he's not the same player as Brad Marchand, like not straight up compare, but like you look at the evolution of Brad Marchand's career, he's found a way to channel his inner rat in a way that is by and large, you know, keeps him out of the public eye in terms of public, you know, in terms of player safety and getting suspended and things like that. Like he could be, he's found a way. It took a lot of trial and error. It took a lot of hefty fines and long suspensions, but he's found a way to get there. I feel like, again, Tkachuk's a different style of player. He certainly hasn't crossed the line with suspensions to the same degree Marchand did early in his career. But I just think time will take care of some of that. And you don't want to, you'd love to bottle up what Brady Tkachuk has and sell it. You don't want to limit it. That's where I stand.
So when you, this is the last thing and then we can dead it. So when you see Steve Dangle and all them other guys just, you know, taking their moment, their victory lap with this, what do you say to that?
It's like you're trying to have me anger the bosses here. I feel like this is like
I'm
a devious chat topic.
Angered. No one's getting angry here. Everyone's in a good mood. Two-thirds of the bosses are celebrating birthdays this week. They just got that fancy YouTube plaque for, 100,000 subscribers. Everyone's in a great mood. There's nothing you could do that would piss them off.
There you go. Well, what I would say is I have no problem with players being angry about some of these sort of unwritten rules. It's just about how you express that anger is the only thing that's really up for debate. And I would think if you put it in those terms to Steve Dangle or to Adam Wilde, I don't know if Jesse, I don't know how Jesse feels on this topic. He's probably not as fired up as the other two, but I would think that they would not condone cross-checking guys in the head. I think really that was in the moment when everything was, it was hard to sort through that sort of sequence of events. Cause there was like a lot buried in there, but really, I don't think anyone was, I mean, a couple people took the stance that Morgan Riley shouldn't even be angry. Fair enough. That's your opinion. I'm fine with them being angry. Just, don't do anything that clearly breaks the rules and is could be very dangerous to an opponent.
Yeah.
And so my point is, I don't mind if Brady Tkachuk is angry because his team's officially eliminated from the playoffs and he's had a physical game and there was stuff in that game with him and Heischer. And like, you know, he kind of, his wires crossed a little bit, but he didn't do anything that got him suspended. So that's where I stand.
But I have no problem.
I don't like guys. I will come out and say, I don't like guys taking a slap shot into an empty net. Like, I just think it is poking the bear. But that being said, if a player does do that, his team won. Like, you can't go swing your stick at him. That's all it is.
But wait, hold on a second. So you don't like that, but what about a guy putting a puck into a net when the game's over? Like what he sure did. You'd rather that? That's not disrespectful?
That is an unwritten rule.
Okay.
Right. Like I don't think, again, I just don't think you need to do it. But also, the response to not being happy, like if this happens in the playoffs, right? Let's say it's game one of any series. We don't know the teams yet. Team A against Team B. Team B, a player slides a puck into an empty net after the whistle and the other team's angry. There's lots of legal ways either at the end of that game or in the next game to use that as some kind of fuel to finish every check on that player in a legal fashion that I'm quite okay with. Like, I think you should be a little bit pissed off about that. But again, I'm just not advocating being so pissed off you do something that gets you suspended. That's where I stand. And I think if we talk Steve through this, I think we'd get him there, quite honestly, even though, like, I know he probably loves to hate the Senators and all this stuff. Like, I think he's enjoying, like, this dish was best served, you know, it's a little bit delicious. I get it. If you want to be on the takey side, but Julian, I knew you were going to take me here today.
I could tell this has made you feel uncomfortable. So we're going to leave it there. Oh, it's okay, man. It's okay. I'm glad you spoke
the piece. I don't like the shots into the empty net, though, like that. I'll just say that.
I get
like
that. I just think that there's a
winning with sort of a class and dignity thing that I like. That's how I like my sports.
I love my sports with class and dignity. We say that about a sport where it's legal to punch people in the head. It's just really ironic. But I know.
It's anyway. The whole thing. Yeah, it doesn't stand up to much scrutiny, does it?
No, it doesn't. It doesn't at all. But we move. Let's talk about the Eastern Conference wildcard race. Remember that time we were talking about it? It seemed as if nobody wanted that second playoff spot in the wildcard.
I'm still not sure anybody does. I mean, they want it.
But like, yeah, it's not as there's a lot of teams that have been losing. But right now, on April 9th, we're recording this in the morning, and hopefully this will be out before games start. But the Detroit Red Wings and the Pittsburgh Penguins, 84 points. The Capitals, the Flyers at 83 points. It's a dead heat between all of those teams for that second and final wild card spot. We should mention the Islanders, too, who are at 85. They're third in the Metropolitan Division. But if there's some leapfrogging going on, the Islanders will end up right in that pit. What do you think of how the race for that wild card spot has been going?
This is the best argument to go back to 1-8 conference playoffs I've ever seen. Like, it's actually, think about it. Whoever finishes in that third slot in the Metro is going to face the second best team in the Metro, which will likely be Carolina, it looks like. Mm-hmm. So Carolina is going to get a much easier matchup than the 2-3 in the other division. Like, Florida and Toronto likely are the 2-3 in the Atlantic. We got to go back to the 1-8. The other part about this is, like, if you look at these standings, you're a casual fan. Do you even know how to read them? Like, do you know who is playing whom in the first round? Like, who's on pace? Like, 1-8 was so simple. You just line the conference up. You put a really dark line under, like, bolded line under the eighth team, and you realize that's the cutoff line. 1-8, 2-7. We got to get back to that. I saw Pierre LeBrun wrote a piece of The Athletic. I realize that's not the spirit of the question, but this underlines it. Like, this is just a whole mishmash that you know, from 3-6 in the Metropolitan Division is just like a lot of meh. Now, there's good storylines built into that. I mean, we have the possibility of an Islanders-Rangers series. We have the possibility of Sidney Crosby getting back to the playoffs, Ovechkin. Like, it doesn't mean that this is going to produce poor outcomes. And, you know, at least Pittsburgh, to their credit, have, you know, gone 6-0-3 in their last nine games. Crosby's been the leading goal scorer, or point getter, rather, through that time period. So they're making a real push for it, and that's what it's going to take. I mean, you hope that whoever grabs the last spot will be a team that is at least playing well heading into the playoffs, but I just don't have much. I don't know. I guess there's not that a ton between all these teams, but it just feels like it's a long season, and now it's a coin flip. It's a jump ball. And they're not all playing each other, right? Like, that's the other part of it. Now, I know Pitt just did face Washington the last week, but it's I don't hate the race. I hate what it means. I feel like you're basically going to have two of the best teams again in the conference in round one, and then, like, a wonky. Like, if anyone deserves the team that barely slides in.
Yeah. Well, no. What's the last thought?
It's a hard conversation to have in concept right now. Like, let's revisit this in 9 days, and okay. But what I'll say is, what we'll do then is we'll be like, this is what seed this team is. You're going to have like a 4-7 seed, and you're going to have like a 1-3 seed in terms of overall points in the season. Like, it's just every year you're going to have this at least in one, like, it stands to reason there's going to be one weaker division every season. Now, that changes over time. You know, there was a time those Metro teams were all giant killers, and you know, it wasn't their turn. You know, the Pacific Division used to be, you remember, you'd be like, how do you go to California and even win a game when, you know, Anaheim and LA and San Jose were all awesome, and obviously the Kings are still a competitive team, but, you know, it's been rebuilds elsewhere. Like, over time, I guess my point is the balance of power shifts from division to division, but I just think a conference format is far more fair.
Yeah, I'm all for 1-8. But, you know, Gary Bettman seems to think the format's fine, and the idea that we're even questioning it, why fix what isn't broke? That's at least the thinking from the NHL, as we've heard.
But 1-8 would be awesome just the same.
It absolutely would be.
Like, let's do the exercise. I'm going to call up NHL.com on my phone.
Let's do it.
We'll just pretend the NHL season has just ended, and we're sitting here, and we're going to sort by conference. So right now, I'll go by points percentage even. I'm going to get like little. So right now,
I have the standings in front of me too.
Right now, you'd still have New York, Detroit.
Yes.
You'd have Boston Islanders, Carolina, Tampa, Florida, Toronto.
Those are still pretty good. Those are great matchups. You get six with least, New York, Detroit. Go ahead.
It's at least fair, right? Because Carolina is going to be the three, what we would call the three seed in the conference. And they're going to get like the seventh seeded team. That's like, it's basically assured. We don't know who that seventh seeded team will be, but it's going to be three. It just seems like needlessly weird. Anyway.
No, but I think that's cool, too. And if you want to look at the West, Dallas-Vegas would be the first round matchup, which, mm-hmm. I mean, we talk about being fair. I mean,
Western Conference final repeat from last year.
Yeah, but, like, watch out for Vegas. Vancouver-Los Angeles, Colorado-Nashville, Winnipeg-Edmonton as a first round series. Ooh. Those are still some pretty good matchups in the West.
Yeah, I just don't think one to eight ruins anything matchup wise. Like, I know they're trying to accentuate rivalries or whatever, but the thing is with wild cards, you still have teams that potentially go through another division anyway. Like, you don't even keep it two divisional playoffs, like, strictly with this system. So I don't, the conference thing was totally fine by me. Like, I don't, it's been 10 years with this system. Like, who's happy with it? I'm happy with the playoffs.
Gary Bettman is, but, like, I love the playoffs too. It's an easy switch.
And I just think it makes the regular season matter more.
Also, I'm a dummy. When I hit the standings for the Western Conference, I looked through points and not points percentage. So it'd be still Dallas, Vegas, but it'd be Vancouver, Nashville, Colorado, LA, and you still get Edmonton, Winnipeg. That's just a small thing. Whatever. Yeah. Still more or less the same.
And I guess at the end of the day, we're probably going to have what? 12 teams entering this playoffs out of the 16 that could maybe win, that you could make a case for. Like, I think it's going to be hard to make a case for the bottom two teams that make it from the Metro. Like, it's going to be hard to say with a straight face, like, I think the Islanders are a cup favorite, or the Penguins or the Capitals or whoever gets in. But, like, you know, it's still a fairly wide open field. Maybe you want to take it to eight teams. There's still eight teams. There's still half the playoff field, like, I think has a reason to believe, if things go their way, if they stay healthy, if they get, like, that they could find their way to winning the cup. And look, that's what makes the whole playoffs compelling, is that it is, you know, it's not decided before we play the first game of the playoffs next Saturday.
I agree. One other thing in terms of making the standings a lot more easy to understand, something that just came to my mind. Why doesn't the NHL have a separate tab where they maintain what the playoffs would look like if they started today? Like, someone every day just, like, looks through the standings, and on a separate page, you could literally have it on the NHL site next to where you have the tabs for division, wild card, conference, and league, and just be like, what would the playoffs look like today? And you can see that the Rangers would play, as an example, Detroit in the first round.
It's funny, I actually noticed on socials they put that out a fair bit. Like, they do grab it. Put it on their social channels. Be right. I think it'd be an easy add to the website. And, you know, ultimately, you just want to make the game more accessible, the league more accessible. Like, I don't know about you, but something that's, like, super complicated, like, who just invests the time? If you're not already super interested, like, I just think it's easier to move on. And this standings is hard to read. I don't care what you say. Like, you gotta really think it through. Like, what is this versus this versus, like,
yeah, you gotta know it, which speaks
something to be said for simplicity.
Yes, I agree with
and
that.
And see, they like, and they would argue what they love is they get the brackets, right? Like, in this divisional thing.
Yeah.
They like that they can, like, NCAA it. Whereas you can't really do that in a 1-8 because you reseed after each round. And so, yes. Anyway.
You have a lot of thoughts on standings and brackets.
I know. I'm in the minutia today.
Clearly. That's okay. It's making for good content.
Do you know how I spent my morning? I went to Centennial College and spoke to some sports media students.
Oh, that's cool. That's awesome. How'd that
Professor
go?
Professor Shai Davidi invited me.
Oh, nice. Nice.
It was good, actually. They were super well prepared. There's four students that had me basically at the front of the class, and they were being graded on their interview of me. So they interviewed me for, I mean, I didn't time it, but a good 45 minutes or so, maybe longer. And then
that's awesome.
Then I took a Q&A from the wider class, but, like, I was impressed by it. Like, they had gone deep, man. They were asking about our show. Like, they had done their research before they showed up this morning.
How do you feel when you get that opportunity to go to these classes and speak to students? I know it's one thing to have people reach out to you via email, but to be in those classroom settings and speak to them.
It's cool. I mean, it's hard not to think back to my own time in their chair. Like, you know, it's a fair bit of time ago now, but the minute you're, like, back, like, I'm not in a university setting very often day to day. Right. And so the minute you walk into, like, a place of higher learning, you walk into a class, like, you inevitably kind of revert in my mind back to when I was a student and, you know, remember a lot of my journalism classes, you know, being in downtown Toronto, they had not necessarily sports reporters, but, you know, pretty prominent reporters and columnists from the newspapers at the time would come in and do those things. And so it's a reminder of how much time shrinks. And honestly, I'm just trying to, you know, it's hard to have the right piece of advice. I think I've said that before, but I'm just trying to share my experience and my perspective and really just like give them some glimmer of positive energy, like good, you know, hope. And so I hope I could do that today. It was also, it was cool. Like I even had one like this, like one guy asked me how I treat my beard, which I've never had in none of those. You know, there was a fair number of like running and running adjacent questions, like what I listen to for podcasts. Like there was a lot of stuff that isn't just a traditional, how do I get a job and break into the industry kind of stuff. And a lot of nuanced stuff about texting with, you know, people in hockey. Like it was neat. I hope I didn't waste your time. Like that's my biggest
thing. I don't
think
you did. I'm sure you made those kids' days. And the fact that you were willing to take on questions about you just speaks to the personality that you are and how much people actually like you as a personality.
We'll see. I don't know.
We'll see.
The beard question.
That sounds rather ominous.
The beard question. He's like, I love your beard game. The guy actually, like, he had a nice beard. And he's like, how do you maintain that? I was like, well, I hate to tell you this. I just go to my barber, basically. Like, I use beard oil day to day. And then I go to Safe. My man Safe keeps me. And right now, actually, I'm a bit scruffy. So this isn't Safe's fault. This is just because I haven't seen Safe recently enough.
Okay, one more thing before I ask about the Penguins. What beard oil do you use?
Well, I use the same company that I usually wear the bear hats from.
Oh, I didn't realize they had
beard oil. North Standard. Yeah, so I get beard oil from them.
Okay. All right. We still need them as a sponsor. That'd be really fun. Anyway, the Pittsburgh Penguins are one of the four teams I mentioned in the running for that final playoff spot in the East. I really thought they'd be dead by now. They were dead.
They pulled the Frankenstein, like the casket ripped open, and then they're like, they were totally dead. Like the math for them was brutal 3 weeks ago. Brutal. Like they had no chance. And then Sidney Crosby's like, yeah, you thought I was 36. Doesn't matter.
I'm playing like I'm 26. And even if I am 36, I'm still better than so many players in the league. That's Sidney Crosby.
Maybe lost in it because Malkin is not at the same level, but he's had a couple big games, scored some big goals. He's had his parents over watching them in Pittsburgh. They hadn't been here in a long time.
They were crying when he had that 2-goal game the other night.
Exactly. I mean, look, they all know it's getting towards the end of the road for him as an NHL player. So, yeah, they've willed their way back into it. It's been helped by the fact that none of those teams, the Capitals, the Devils, the Islanders, like none of them have gone crazy and run away from them. And so that's kept the... it's kept the light on, I'll say, for Pittsburgh. And now it's down to who can have the best, you know, four or five games left on the schedule. I mean, I don't think it's not that complicated. I suppose the question for Pittsburgh is, you know, they've had this run where they have points in 9 straight games. Can they keep it going for 5 more? Like, I don't know if that's the case, or 4 more, whatever they have left. Like it you know, eventually it's going to be hard, but they got a chance. And, you know, I was part of a scrum with Sidney Crosby on Monday. Like he's pretty clearly energized by it. Right. I mean, he didn't deny that, you know, the hope was pretty low in the dressing room, not that long ago, and that they've managed to kind of get the momentum going and play the right way. I think they've got some great goaltending from Nedeljkovic in particular has helped this stretch. I mean, they got hot at the right time. This was Florida a year ago. I'm not predicting a run to the cup final, but Florida was like tooth and nail to make the playoffs last season. In fact, had Pittsburgh beat Chicago in the last game of the season, I'm pretty sure Florida would have missed the playoffs. So that's how close it was for the Panthers. And you know, you're just trying to play your best when it matters most. And I think Pittsburgh's there. I still don't know who's going to hit those spots. That's why we got to watch. You know, we got one weekend of hockey left, of regular season hockey.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, this is our last Saturday night coming up this week of the regular season. It's crazy. This year's flown by, and it was a tough break for the Penguins to tie the game late in Toronto and lose in overtime, but hey, at least they left with a point. That's better than the alternative.
Absolutely. They need all the points that they can get. One other discussion we had over the weekend, over text, but like Sidney Crosby having the season that he's having, hitting the 40 goal plateau, it's a special year for him. The fact that he's able to do it at this age, it's just a shame that he's doing it in a year where Connor McDavid is so good and he'll likely get to 100 assists at some point this week. And Nathan MacKinnon has been so good. And Nikita Kucherov has been so good. Because if you wanted to make a case
Kucherov's
for
Kucherov's also probably going to get 200 assists, by the way.
Yeah, like that craziness. That's just hilarious, like, that like we've made such a big deal about one guy doing it. There could be two guys.
Well, that's what's weird about this season is if you look across the board, scoring as a whole isn't up. But you have these individual performances that are superlative. Like you still have Matthews chasing 70 goals. You've got Kucherov chasing 100 assists. McDavid is a virtual certainty to get to 100 assists. You know, you've got three guys. I don't know if are they going to get 140 points. Like Crosby's best individual season was 120 points. Different game, different era. Maybe not exactly apples to apples, but it still underlines like you're just having some of these like crazy singular offensive years from the top talents in the league. And you lead me to the question, like, can Crosby get into Hart conversation? Is that where you kind of?
Yeah, that's essentially it. My whole point is just like, and I'm not saying like, oh man, like, do you put him above those three players? I don't think that's what you do. My question is, because the way it works is when we compile our ballots, you mentioned the five top guys who should get votes. Like, is Crosby good enough to get like a fourth or a fifth place vote?
For me, is for sure. You know, I think that there's real debate between the likes of him, you know, Matthews, wherever you rate, whether it ends up being 65 or 68 or 70 goals. I mean, either way, it's going to be the best goal scoring season of a generation by an NHL player. You got Connor Hellebuyck. Some people don't like putting a goalie in that position, but it's hard to argue when you look at some of the underlying goaltending metrics, like goals saved above expected. He's right at the top of the league there. Clearly been a big part of the success the Jets have had. You know, Roman Josi is getting a bit of love with the run the Predators have had to get in the playoffs. I mean, I think that's sort of the, if you separate the three, MacKinnon, McDavid, Kucherov, and I'm not saying they have to be 1, 2, 3, but I think they're on most ballots, they'll probably be some version of that will be the top three. It's just my guess. So then when you look at your decisions for 4, 5, you know, you're down to Matthews, Crosby, Hellebuyck, Josi, whoever else you might want to toss in there. Pasternak might get some love. I mean, one thing that, you know, I think has Kucherov getting some love is obviously the big gap between him and the next best scorer on his team. I mean, Pasternak has something similar going on in Boston right now too. And look, there's other guys, but I think when you look at it that way, I think Crosby's going to get a lot of Hart Trophy votes, like in the 4 to 5 range. You know, some might choose to put him in the top three. That's their prerogative. You know, the reason we have 150 plus voters, whatever it ends up being with the exact number, is because
someone's going to do it. Someone is going to do it, especially if they make the playoffs. Someone is going to do it.
Give him the number one vote.
You know what? Yeah. I mean, we had a whole thing last year where didn't someone leave like Connor McDavid off their ballot entirely?
I think it was Seth Rohrbaugh from
Seth Rohrbaugh who did that.
Pittsburgh.
That,
yeah.
We live in a world where that could happen. Why? Like, I'm not saying you shouldn't do it or whatever. Do what you want. But I could see someone doing it if they make the playoffs.
And maybe you can make a case. The hard thing for me, and look at, I have immense respect for Sidney Crosby. Like, seriously, I think he has a case to go down as the classiest player of this generation, and he's already the best player of the generation. Like, there's no negative in this, but I think you do have to look at it with the cold, hard facts. I mean, he's going to finish 30 to 40 points behind three players, likely, in the scoring charts, unless he goes absolutely bananas the next week. So it's just hard for me to get my mind around that being the number one season in the league. But, you know, You can interpret the award as literally as it is, right? You can maybe argue he's so much more valuable to the Penguins than other players are to their team, even as great as those players are individually. And that there's no way. I mean, I'm comfortable saying there's no way Pittsburgh would make the playoffs without him. They still might not get in there with him. But, you know, he's been the biggest driver behind, you know, even keeping them vaguely in the race. And then certainly this surge they've had, you know, from the end of March into April. So, you know, I think that there's a case for him, but for sure, I'm willing to say, even if they miss the playoffs, he's going to appear on the top five of ballots. I just don't think it's going to be enough support to get him as a finalist. But even at age 36 to be getting Hart Trophy, you know, votes, I mean, we're just looking at a consistently amazing player.
Absolutely. Just one of the greatest to ever do it. Also, you mentioning that Nikita Kucherov is close to 100 assists. He's at 93 right now. The Lightning have 5 games to play. I'm rooting for that too. It's one thing to have one guy do it. Two guys in the same season. This is so awesome.
Does it diminish it? That's what I guess the debate.
I don't think it does.
Does it in any way diminish?
That happens frequently. It's not something that happens all the time. Like the idea that like two guys could do it. I think that's something that should be celebrated. It's a special thing. It's not something that happens every season. If it gets to a point where 2, 3, 4 years after the fact, it's a regular occurrence, it diminishes. But right now, I think we can love this.
Right. And sorry, I'm not diminishing these guys as talents, but I'm saying, does it diminish the accomplishment? Like, obviously, no. It's a special, special accomplishment. It's like Wayne Gretzky, Bobby Orr, and is it Mario Lemieux? The three
I think it's Mario. It's only happened like three guys have done it, and Wayne Gretzky's done it like...
Yeah, but they've 11 done it of the 13 times that's happened. Yeah.
11 or 13 times. Like it's insane. Like, we should be celebrating this.
Sure. And again, I'm not ripping anyone down. Like, no one read, but I'm just wondering, does it take some of the shine, like a small bit of the shine off it? Like, because one of the cool things I would argue about Matthews chasing 70 is he's doing it in a year where no one else is likely to hit 60. No, I mean, someone could, but like, it just is an underlying, and I'm not arguing Matthews for heart. I'm not getting into that. That's not what I'm saying.
No.
Like just winning the Rocket Richard Trophy, setting like a new bar for the generation to come, like that is an award in itself. Man, awards voting really is, it brings out something in people. I think Kucherov's got my number one vote right now, though.
Ooh, okay. I still don't know. I was McKinnon for a while. I don't know now. If Kucherov gets to 100 assists, that really... I mean, this is going to be tough enough for me anyway. I have a lot to think about.
Yeah. And it seems like I saw Greg Wyshynski puts out where he talks to voters. He had McKinnon as the favorite based on the pool that he was sampling. But, you know, it's hard to argue being more valuable to your team than someone. He's been in on half the team's goals and he's got like 48 more points than the next best player on his team. Anyway, we'll see. I don't have to vote yet.
Not yet. We could take our time.
Next week, though, the ballots go out. So we're getting close. We got to think about it.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
This episode of The Chris Johnston Show is brought to you by Shady Rays. Get ready for the season ahead with quality shades built to last. Our friends at Shady Rays have you covered with premium polarized shades that won't break the bank. If you don't know anything about Shady Rays, they're a company that offers a world-class product rated 5 stars by over 300,000 people. Their shades have durable frames and crystal clear optics, making them the perfect choice for all outdoor adventures. Whether you want to go out to the mountains, whether you want to just walk around downtown, or you want to just, you know, hey, look cool in your own apartment, just like I'm doing right now for this ad. They have hundreds of options to choose from, so you're bound to find the perfect pair to match your style. Plus, if your shades ever go missing or take an unexpected hit, don't sweat it. They have the most insane protection in all of eyewear. Every pair is backed by lost or broken replacements. And if you don't love your shades, exchange them for a new pair or return worry-free within 30 days. There's no risk when you shop. Their team always has your back with personal and fast support. They got a real nice deal at Shady Rays right now. Go to ShadyRays.com and use code Johnston for 50% off 2 or more pairs of polarized sunglasses. That's 2 or more pairs of polarized sunglasses, 50% off if you go to ShadyRays.com and use the code Johnston. It's their best deal of the season. Try for yourself the shades rated 5 stars by over 300,000 people. One other thing with Austin Matthews, since you mentioned him. I'm not going to get you to talk about MVP consideration. We discussed that already. But he is at 65 goals, the 13th NHL player to do that. There are 5 games left in the Leafs season. They play the New Jersey Devils later Tuesday night. They play the Devils on Thursday. They get the Red Wings, the Panthers, and then the Lightning on the 17th. Which of these games do you think Austin Matthews scores 70? Because I think it's only a matter of time now.
I think the Leafs would hope it comes in the Florida game on Tuesday, because it would give them the ability, without any drama or anything, to sit him out on Wednesday.
Yes.
Because, you know, let's face it. If you look at their history, they've often sat, you know, him and Marner. Like, they've often sat their top offensive guys one of the last couple games in recent regular seasons just to, you know, keep them a little fresher for the playoffs. Like, I totally get the thinking. But I really do think it'll be hard to sit him out. You know, if he's at 69 goals entering the last game of the season, even if it's a back-to-back, I feel like, man, I don't even want to see the takes if that happens. But, you know, so I'm going to say Tuesday in Florida. I'm not sure he gets it. Like, I'm not doubting the guy. Like, he's just scored 10 goals in 10 games without Mitch Marner on his wing. Like, for anyone who wants to argue that he's, and look, I'm not arguing he hasn't been a product of Marner, but he also isn't only requiring that. But it's just, it's a lot. That can he score one? And but he clearly wants it. So I'm going to say Tuesday in Florida just to make life easy. But life isn't usually easy. It's probably going to be Wednesday in Tampa. And it's like, did they play him? Do they sit him? Even if he's at 68 entering the last game of the season, I mean, we know we can get two. It's a tough call. And then also, like, 70 is a big round number. It's good for us to talk and write about, but does it really matter, right? Like, it matters, but does it really matter?
We know the score.
You know, I think internally that's where they would probably be at. I mean, Sheldon Keefe has been very careful in recent days when answering sort of the hypotheticals about how he's going to handle who plays which games and all that stuff. And, you know, they did sit Mitch Marner out, if I'm not mistaken. I think he had 97 points one year, and they sat him out for a game. And, you know, it's 3 points is a lot, but, you know, a player like Mitch Marner can get 3 points. It's not a crazy night for him. It'll be interesting. But it's been quite a stretch. You know, the next goal Austin Matthews scores, no one playing in his lifetime will have got that high.
Well,
the last season of 66 or more was Mario Lemieux in 95, 96. He got 69 that year. But, you know, Austin was born in September 97. So, I mean, he's literally doing something that the generation before him didn't do. That's basically the significance of it.
And I'm surprised you didn't say nice after 69 that time.
I was leaving that for you. I put that on the tee for you and you didn't even take a swing.
Well, I wanted to. It's just that you did that the last episode. I forget why we mentioned 69, but you did it. So I was like, I'm going to let CJ get at it again.
I try to bring something a little unpredictable each episode, right? I don't want to be too, I don't want to be too the same thing all the time.
I get that. I you know what? I think this is just us being two nice guys, just wanting to see the other get their shine. I think that's what this is going to get chopped up as. I love that.
I think, but yeah, so it's, you know, that's the only thing going. It's funny. I was at the Blue Jays game on Monday night in the crowd, just enjoying some time in the stands. Literally, the person beside me and the person behind me were both watching the Leafs game on their phone. And we're both like, 65! Like, you know, like it's something that fans are, you know, charting closely. It's clear Austin Matthews' teammates are. I'm sure it's in his mind. It's still a big ask. Like, it's right there for him, but it's 5 goals in 5 games. Like, some players, that would be the best run of their career. But, you know, Austin, I think, has 51 goals in his last 55 games. So he basically is a goal-a-game player, but he's got to do it right now at the right time. You know, he's got some teams to do it against. The Devils like to play some back-and-forth hockey, so 2 games against them. I don't know.
I like your answer for that Tuesday game against Florida.
That makes it easiest for everyone. I do. I know that probably that's what everyone internally is cheering for, because you allow him to get his moment. And then you're like, okay, you take Wednesday night off. Let's get ready. They're likely to play the Panthers. Maybe they don't even take them to Tampa for that last day. They just like leave them down in South Florida. Who knows? I'm not sure how they'll handle that, but certainly it's going to be an extended Florida road trip, assuming the Leafs start on the road, because they do play Tuesday in Florida, Wednesday in Tampa, and then likely Saturday to open the playoffs, likely in Florida. So lots of chance to get some vitamin D if you remember the Leafs in the next week here.
Yes, that is true. And the sun is great. We will take questions for Ask CJ. Thanks to you guys sending in tweets and messages on Discord. But first, we got to talk about the Arizona Coyotes, because last episode we discussed a report that surfaced about Coyotes ownership, or specifically Alex Morello, looking to find some other prospective buyers for the team. Since then, we have seen the Yotes unveil a plan to buy that plot of land that will be up for auction in June. And the mayor of Scottsdale saying he doesn't want anything to do with whatever new arena is coming. Oh, and Ryan Smith, who is trying his best to bring NHL hockey to Salt Lake City, is now soliciting names for a team in Salt Lake City if that happens. What's going on with this Arizona situation? And why do I feel as if something's up? Something's up.
The vibes aren't good, right? I mean, it's not, you know, let's start with the mayor of Scottsdale. I mean, the parcel of land the Coyotes are trying to buy is not in Scottsdale.
Yes.
So, I mean, it would be nice if you were them and the mayor of Scottsdale was also excited about it. But, you know, I don't know that that person has jurisdiction to do too much. But obviously there's some political sway and, you know, they chose to put out a op-ed, you know, basically contesting it. You know, the land auction itself is due to be held June 27th. And, you know, the reality is a decision for next season is going to have to come before that land auction is held. And so I think as much as June 27th is a date of interest, I mean, I'm looking more like the end of May, because it was the end of May when the Atlanta Thrashers were sold and relocated to Winnipeg. I think it was May 31st. And, you know, 3 weeks later, that was made official by the Board of Governors. But the initial plan machinations were unfolding as of the end of May. And so that's the time frame for the Coyotes. And I don't know exactly how it's going to shake down. I mean, all signs here point to Alex Morello still wanting to own the team. And obviously, at least in some way, shape, or form, they're pushing ahead trying to get this piece of land. I'll underline this. The Coyotes say that if they got that land, they're eyeing a 2026-2027 season for the opening of the new arena. So that is what? 4, 5, 5, 6? Or is it 7, 27, 28? I think it's 3 more years at minimum that they would be in, presumably in Mullet Arena. Three more years before they'd have their new building. Like,
really?
I just don't know if that's a tenable situation for that length of time. You know, like when we just boil it all down, like for me, there's no debate. Arizona, I think, will be a strong NHL market at some point in the future. I'm just not sure that future is in the very near future. They've got to get this right. And unfortunately, it's kind of gone wrong, right? You're winding down the second year at Mullet. You don't even own the land yet for the new building. You've got other politicians speaking out against you. You've already lost a referendum in Tempe for a previous plan building. Like it just feels like they're running out of time to keep this working in the short term. And so Salt Lake City sitting right there and they're soliciting team names, things that make you go,
What do you think is a good name for the Salt Lake City team if it happens?
Oh, man.
Have we discussed that before?
No, I don't even know what... I haven't even seen what the possibilities are. Like, I don't even know what the hot ones are out there on online. If I'm not mistaken, the Utah Jazz got their nickname because they moved from New Orleans, right?
Correct.
I'm pretty sure they were like the New Orleans Jazz or something like that, and they just kept the name. So that's not even a name like local to the market, nickname. I don't know. I'm open to discussing this further though. If we see some of the suggestions, I like the idea of naming the teams. Remember, there's a lot of people pushing for the historical Seattle Metropolitans yes. when they instead went Northern New Age with Kraken. But you know, it's part of like identifying Kraken. An identity. I like the Kraken too. But I'm sure there's some. Maybe there might be historical names, you know, from hockey in the past. Not at the NHL level, obviously, in Utah. That I do know for one that they want it to be a Utah team. So the name, almost for certain, unless plans have changed since I last talked to someone on this, will be Utah something. I just don't know. I don't know what the best.
I was holding out for Salt Lake City Sasquatch, but if it's going to be Utah, then you got to be a little bit more creative.
Was it Utah Grizzlies in like minor level pro before?
They should still exist, right? In the ECHL, they should still exist.
Was it ECHL or UHL or one of the lower level?
Yeah, the Utah Grizzlies are still playing in the ECHL.
Well, I guess they're probably not going to give up their name. So,
yeah,
I'm just trying to think of historical ones. Yeah, I don't have the name for you, but
or why not? Why can't they give up the name? How much for the naming rights?
Well, I guess there's a price on everything.
I mean, yeah, it has to be. But like, if you're that down bad or I don't know,
I don't hate Utah Grizzlies, though, I got to say.
I don't hate Utah Grizzlies at all.
Although it's given us some Vancouver Grizzlies vibes, but...
Yeah, and that... R.I.P.
Big Country Reeves.
Yeah, R.I.P. to the Vancouver Grizzlies. Anything else you want to mention before I get to ask CJ?
No. I mean, we haven't talked about Arizona for the last time. I know that much. Lots of episodes between now and May 31st. Stay tuned.
Let's get to Ask CJ, where we're taking your questions off of Twitter and Discord. Thank you so much to everyone who contributed this time around. We'll start with this question from Richard. What will happen first? The Coyotes land deal being finalized or Steve Dangle talking about the Arizona land deal?
Ooh.
Did you see the clip of him leaving his own podcast because he did not want to talk about the land deal?
I think Steve's going to have to talk about it before anything's finalized. That's where I'm landing there. So yeah. Steve can have his own little hunger strike here or voice strike against the Arizona situation. But I think he's going to have to, get back on that horse and ride again before too much longer.
Okay. What about from Kate? This is for you and I. Have we seen the Savannah Bananas play banana ball? They wanted to make baseball more exciting for fans. What could be done to create a hockey version of banana ball?
I don't know what banana ball is. I presume it's different rules, more fan-friendly rules. I mean, you could eliminate offsides and try to basically have it where there's fewer stoppages. That might be a little more fan-friendly. I suppose you could go down to 3-on-3 all the time, maybe even make the rink a little smaller in some ways so that there's more action at each end. But I still think we got the best game going. So I'm certainly not out here advocating those changes. I'm just fine with 5-on-5, and I bet come April 20th, anyone who loves hockey and turns on their televisions are going to love what they see.
For sure, but like I'm cool with the idea of the NHL still being able to do its thing, and then you have a hockey equivalent of the Harlem Globetrotters. Like, that's a fine concept.
Sure. And so I think the answer is smaller rink surface, more action, more offense.
Yeah. And make some of the goals worth, like, two or something.
I'm here for that. But I'm here for that. You know, I'm not going to be the target audience, as I say. I'm not in on banana ball. I went to the Jays game last night. Like, I love baseball as it is and, you know. But I get it. You got to market it to new people. That makes sense. To new fans, to younger people with different attention spans and different priorities. Like, that makes sense.
From Taylor. Hey, CJ. Last pod, you talked about being in the press box for big moments. What was it like when John Tavares scored the game winner in Game 6 in Tampa last year?
It was pretty cool. One of the unique parts about the Tampa press box is that there's one giant service elevator. And because it's giant and it's slow, kind of everyone comes down at the same time. So that's reporters, that's scouts, that's, you know, workers in the arena. That's the GM of the team, maybe the winning team and the losing team. I've been in that press box. I don't have a specific memory of like that elevator ride down. I do have one where I've been in there before, even when Steve Yzerman was GM of the Lightning, and you're in there with like both GMs right after an overtime win or loss for one, obviously. And it's like kind of crazy. You know, the scene in general though was wild. I mean, I've been lucky to cover a lot of playoff games, a lot of playoff series games, overtime winners, you know, goals that meant more in history than the John Tavares goal. And that's still one of the more excited locker room scenes I've taken in. And, you know, someone might use that against the Leafs. That's not actually why I'm bringing it up here. I'm saying they were carrying around that weight and those questions and the label of never getting it done. They were in Game 6 in Tampa the year before with a chance to close out the series in overtime and didn't get it done. And they finally scored the goal they weren't able to score. Now, I recognize it didn't transform into a long playoff run. What happened against Florida happened against Florida. But in that moment, that was a pretty cool moment to have the behind-the-scenes pass. And in fact, I wrote one of my favorite like deadline stories I've ever written in my career was the story I wrote that night after that win. And I literally just took mental notes and physical notes of everything I saw and threw it together on a page. Just the scene. And it was quite a scene. It was pretty cool. And you know, that's what it's all about. Playoffs and overtime. Like,
I'm jealous. I wish I was covering a team that was in the playoffs.
Yeah. Sorry that didn't happen. You will.
No, okay. It's okay. Look, I can say in my lifetime I've covered a team that's gone to a Stanley Cup final. Like,
yes.
If I have to wait a couple more years to get back to that, so be it.
And you still got a two at the start of your age. So, I mean, there's a long career ahead.
Only for a couple more days. From Dallas Stars fan.
Are you turning 30?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
You're still really young. But I didn't realize you were turning 30.
Yeah. Congrats. Thursday. I turned 30 on Thursday.
My man.
Yes, sir.
And we're going to make you podcast on your birthday.
I wouldn't have it any other way. Honestly, okay. I love the idea of doing like this show, and I'm going to do radio that day too. Like, this is such a cool life to live that, like, working on my birthday, that's exactly what I would want to do.
Right.
Absolutely. Okay.
Love
from
that.
Dallas Stars fan. Did CJ really never watch Dragon Ball Z?
Never, not once. I don't even know what it is.
I know we talked about it in the group chat. I forgot about the fact that I guess Steve might have tweeted about that out there, I guess, but like I didn't realize that you had never watched Dragon Ball Z.
Never once. Like, actually, honestly, hand over heart. Like, I mean, you know, I'm pretty honest. Anyone who listens to this pod and is this deep into another show, I don't even know what it is.
So when we say Goku, Piccolo, Frieza, Gohan, Kamehameha, Spirit Bomb.
Dude.
You looking at me like a total alien. You have no idea.
It sounds like Marco Polo to me. Like, I don't know.
Oh,
like, what?
Oh my God. I figured, like, how are you too old for that? You didn't read any of the mangas?
It's hard to explain when you literally just don't know what, like, I do not know what you're talking about. Like, you could be doing your version of the fake movie game where you're just like naming fake words from Dragon Ball Z, and I still won't, like, I don't know what you're talking about. So
no, dude. But I've asked you, like, you know what anime is? Were there any anime shows you were into?
Not really. Was Sailor Moon anime?
Yeah, Sailor Moon is anime.
Like, I remember, like, I sort of watched that a little bit as a kid, but like, I wasn't.
You're Sailor Moon?
I wasn't Sailor super Moon into fan? It, but like, I remember seeing it.
Okay.
You've got me typecast. Look, I don't watch movies as an adult.
I'm typecasting you at all.
No, don't, but I'm just saying. No, but you know the answer here. Like, I wasn't. I don't watch movies as an adult. I wasn't watching a ton of movies as a kid or like shows. Like, I was a sports nut. I was an absolute sports nut, and that's when I was in front of a screen. I was usually watching sports for the most part, and when I wasn't, I was outside playing road hockey or roller hockey or.
But what about like sports movies? You've seen like sports movies.
Yeah. Like all of them from that era, like Mighty Ducks movies.
Yes.
All the baseball ones, like The Rookie or Angels in the Outfield or
Major League.
Major League. Yeah, absolutely. Like I saw all Tin Cup, I loved as a kid. Like I saw all the sports movies of that generation. I haven't seen them all since. But yeah, I wasn't watching Dragon Ball Z or I don't know.
Well, now I know for the next time we play the movie game.
I never played with Pogs. Like, I don't, like, I just don't, like, a lot of stuff was happening that I just wasn't participating in. But I think that's the same as everyone.
What are Pogs?
It was an older person thing. I don't know. I didn't play with them. I just know that kids my age were into them.
What are Pogs?
I just was into, like, sports stuff. I collected sports cards. I played sports, you know, recreationally in my town. I watched sports on TV.
Is that what Pogs are? Were people just flipping around caps?
Yeah, I honestly don't really know. I know that was a thing when I was a kid. I thought maybe you would be into that, but
nah, I think I'm too young for Pogs.
There you go.
Generational gaps, everybody. Something we navigate through on the CJ show. One last one for you from K-Town 2272. How many days can playoff teams expect between the regular season and game one of the playoffs? There's a few playoff teams playing on the 18th. Are they going to play on 1 or 2 days rest?
I think potentially depends how the matchups fall. And like a lot of the playoff scheduling is really all, I mean, part of it is building availability, obviously. And then the second consideration is television priorities. So I think I think the entire Eastern Conference is done on the 17th, the Wednesday. And so I would expect you'll see Eastern Conference teams open on the 20th. Maybe you get one series in the West on a quick turnaround, but that'll all be just about who's playing whom, what the TV networks want and all those sorts of things.
I think the Flames are playing on the 18th of April. So that's going to be, I mean, at that point, man, both them and the San Jose Sharks, they just want the season to end.
That's a Flames Sharks game?
That's a Flames Sharks game on the 18th.
I'll tell you, man, at home. Might watch that, but I'm not going to see that one.
It's going to be at home, so I'm going to be there for that. I'll be there for that.
I'm not hating on the teams. It's just, you know, it's the definition of sports garbage time, right? Like, it's just not a game that matters.
Well, I mean, I'd rather this versus like the playoffs starting and then like two regular season teams playing against each other in a game that has no implications with both of them not making the playoffs. But that's never happened before.
That was COVID related, though, in some amount of
it fairness. Was COVID related, though. But still, the fact that it had to happen, ridiculous. Anyway, I think we've griped about enough on today's edition of the CJ Show.
Yeah. Love it, though.
It's a good way to put it. Love it, though. Love it. Great time. Great energy, as always. We're back on Thursday. We'll have stick taps and other fun stuff. Also, the 11th, first day of the Masters tournament at Augusta. So very early happy Masters to everyone who...
I celebrate.
Happy Masters.
I celebrate. I know you You're going to say those who celebrate. I celebrate that one.
Those who celebrate. Happy Masters doesn't sit one right of my with me. We'll just say enjoy Augusta. Yes, I love the tournament, mostly because it's around my birthday. Anyway, we're back on Thursday. Subscribe to our show. For CJ, I'm Julian. Peace.
The Chris Johnston Show. Inside the game, twice a week. Follow Chris on Twitter, @ReporterChris. And follow Julian McKenzie, @JK and McKenzie.